Episode two, Casey, this is now called Rule of Threes.
Rule of Threes. I love it.
Excellent podcast name that Casey came up with.
I'm into it because, you know, it's a comedy thing. It's a basketball thing.
I will admit at first I did not understand it. It took me a little while to be like, I mean, I understood it as a comedy point, as a comedy thing. And then I was like, what is, oh, that's what he's getting at.
Right? Three pointers, man. They rule the league now. It's a big thing. And we're ready to embrace it. I feel like I'm embracing it.
And we're embracing callbacks.
Yes. Yeah, of course.
A lot has happened since our last episode.
Oh, boy.
I mean, so I think originally we were like, we're going to publish this once a week. But I feel like during playoffs, we might have to jump in.
It's the playoffs, man. Right? There's so much to talk about because it's been so good so far.
Yeah.
In ways that, you know, I don't think that we were able to see. The only one that I saw was the Pelicans.
Last night?
No. The only one that I visioned, I was able to correctly predict in my head, was that the Pelicans were going to be better than the Trailblazers.
Yeah, I mean, they certainly have been.
Yeah.
And I would say the Trailblazers are probably dead at this point.
I mean, when you lose the first two games on your own home court, that's a real tough one. That doesn't mean that, you know, they aren't going to make it a series or it's not going to get tight, but I think that I feel pretty confident in the Pelicans pulling this
one.
I mean,
they would have to win 4 out of 5.
Yeah.
With two of those games. One game. Yeah, one of those games in New Orleans.
Yep.
Very tough.
Yep. Actually, they got to win 2 in New Orleans.
That's right.
Yeah.
But they've got to. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
How have they been as a road team, Portland, this year?
I don't think that they're amazing.
Yeah.
I think they're just a run-of-the-mill road team. They're not as bad as like the Spurs are, but they're fine.
Well, let's talk Spurs first.
Okay.
Because I watched that game.
Yes.
And
it's so nice to see a team just put up a good half against the Warriors because you know what's going to come in the second half.
Yeah.
It's just, the Warriors are going to come back and do their thing, and they did in the third quarter.
One thing that's, I think, instructive about the Warriors, though, I will say, is that even when the Warriors, is that when teams are bad, they look bad.
Yeah.
So even the Warriors, sometimes I was watching, just like, what are you doing? I don't understand, especially in the first half.
Yeah.
I texted you that I was not impressed by Klay.
Yeah, Klay had a Klay and had
then
the first
right after
half
that, he went,
he went off. It was so fun.
But like so I would be frustrated with him if they were my number one team because he doesn't really show engagement sometimes.
I mean, he's a laid back guy.
Yeah.
You know, like, do you have to be, you know, an Iverson style, like, fiery competitor?
Definitely not. I just, in the first half, I felt like he was passing up shots.
Okay.
That's and right. I don't want you to pass up shots to throw it to Iguodala in the corner. and if Iguodala and Draymond Green had open shots, and I know there's a thing where Kerr, I guess, doesn't want Draymond to take three-pointers or something.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't want Draymond to take three-pointers because I feel like whenever I watch Draymond take three-pointers, he misses them. you know, and I know that he makes, you know, 30%. He's a 30% you know, three-point shooter, but
I just feel 70%
like in, of the ones that I
in the context of their offense, if you, this is the context of any offense, I think that if you've run 17 seconds of action and you get an open shot, you need to take it. That's just my philosophy, because if you are an NBA player and you have an open jump shot, you should take the jump shot. If that's not what you want to get from your offense, then the coach needs to change what the actions are.
Yes.
So there were a couple times in that first half that were frustrating. And I actually don't. First of all, I welcome all of the Golden State existential despair that is created by across the NBA, like on our favorite HP basketball or anything, where they're just like, oh, they're back, forget it, whatever, which I think is just hilarious because to me, I'm like, they play beautiful basketball.
Yes, I believe that when they're running at their best, it's so fun to watch them get up.
Yeah,
and get
I don't.
Down because the thing that starts their offense is their defense.
Yeah.
Right? They are a suffocating defensive team.
They are so good at dealing with correcting like mismatches.
Yeah.
And you going through your first three looks in your offense and being like, "Oh, we didn't get anything out of that." And they're really ballsy about, like, when someone gets switched onto, like, a guard gets switched onto a post player or whatever.
Yeah.
And just Draymond being like, no, let's just switch.
Yeah.
Like, in the middle, while you're sort of sleeping, you've got, like, a 1 second pause in your offense. They'll just be like, we don't want that. And they'll just, like, two guys will just switch position. And they're so coordinated about it. Like,
yeah.
I think that's incredible.
I mean, you see Draymond in the middle of the court just yelling at his guys, like, no, okay, you got to switch now. You got to switch now.
Yeah.
There were a couple of plays that I saw where Draymond was just orchestrating all that, just like you described, in a way that was like, other teams don't do this. They'll just, like, stay in their position and then come to help when they get to their, like, danger zones in the in the key, or, you know, if the ball is being passed around. And the only time that they get burned on that kind of stuff is when teams really pass the ball the entirety of the three-point arc. You know, if you go in, there's mm-hmm. a mismatch, then they pass it out and it goes all the way back around. And if they are able to recover in time, you know, they'll get somebody running out at that last three-point shooter, but you know, until then, you know, they're running around and they're getting those matchups together that just, it's in a way where it looks really good. And you can see that Draymond puts a ton of effort into, like, getting guys in the right place.
Yeah. This reminds me of the Kobe Bryant Detail Show, mm-hmm. which, I watched both episodes of this weekend, and the second episode, I don't know if you saw it.
I didn't watch it.
He analyzed DeMar DeRozan in game one of the Toronto series. And he was saying basically, like, a lot of the screens that they set and DeMar coming off of them are not effective because they're not threats. So he'll receive the ball and it's very clear that he's not about to shoot the ball.
Okay.
So it's not threatening to the defense at all.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of offenses have these sort of natural lulls where it's like, this is part of the play we're running. The real danger point is 3 seconds from now.
Yeah.
And in those lulls, a lot of times is where Golden State, like, makes their adjustments.
Yeah.
So That whole thing where, like, you get a mismatch and then the little guard, you know, he's going to isolate the big man and he decides to, like, I'm going to back up and dribble. A lot of times, that's the time Golden State will be like, no, we'll put our original defender back on you.
Yeah.
So I think it's hilarious.
And that comes from studying film. That comes from knowing another team's sets. And the great thing is that they know that that's the weakness of other teams and they try their best not to have that kind of lulls in their own offense.
Yeah.
They take their defensive principles and go, like, what would it be very hard for us?
There should be constant threats. And they have that pretty much.
I mean, you know, anytime Durant's got the ball, anytime Curry's got the ball, anytime Clay is anywhere near the ball, like, that's a threat. There's always a threat for something to happen.
And they also have, what I love is that you play good defense against them and then Iguodala throws, like, a pocket pass to Kevin Looney for a dunk.
Yes.
You know, like, they've got a lot of good post passing that happens, like, after you've exerted yourself for a lot of the 24 second clock.
Yeah.
And then they just get, like, a simple give and go.
Yes.
And it's so demoralizing.
Yeah. I was watching the JaVale McGee rim runs when he was in mm-hmm. the game.
Yeah.
And he'd just, you know, stay back for a little bit and then run to the rim in transition. And it was just immediate. And the Spurs didn't have an answer for that.
Yeah, they'll basically convert, instead of what other teams would have would be like teardrop floater jumpers around the free throw line. They will do that, and like Kevin Durant had one where it's like, oh, he'll probably make this. Oh, he's just lobbing it to McGee for a dunk.
Yeah.
I think the Spurs are just like, they're fine. I think they're doing as well as they can. I don't think.
And LaMarcus had a monster game.
Yeah, he did.
He had a monster game, and, you know, those are the games where it's like, okay, maybe I'm wrong about LaMarcus Aldridge. Maybe.
I don't think you're wrong.
I mean, like, a game like that makes me think that. It makes me think, okay, all right, I need to look at this guy a little closer.
I don't think you're wrong because I think he can do that against guys that aren't really supposed to be guarding him.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like, well, I guess McGee theoretically, you know, played him well in the game one, but it's, let's have LaMarcus do that against Anthony Davis in a series and then we'll talk. You know what I mean? Like, him doing it to Draymond, he's got a size advantage. And
I mean, Draymond plays him real tight, real tough. And, you know, you can't get anything easy against Draymond, no matter what size you are. And LaMarcus was able to, like, really put in the work on the offensive glass, put in the work down on the block to just kind of play that bully ball that he...
Wait, by the way, how many points did he have?
He had 36.
Oh, remember, I think last time we said his max was 35.
Yeah, something like that. He got us up one.
I think the Spurs are fine. I just, they don't have the roster.
Yeah,
which is
that's understandable.
I think Pop knows that too. Yeah. You know, he's not. His post game for that game was not, he wasn't killing them because he was just like, they tried.
Yeah. I remember we were talking about, you thought that they were just going to kind of pack it in. And I think that the first half of that game showed that they aren't going to pack it in, but they just don't have the talent to compete.
Yeah. They might pack it in. Well, they probably won't pack it in at home.
I could definitely see them taking a game. I don't think they will, but they'll make these ones close.
Yeah. What's your thoughts about Kawhi?
What a situation. It seems so strange to me that they've got to do this very public, like, courting of a player that they already have.
Yeah.
And that there's such an interestingly strange side to this drama. I think it's so... I mean, it's very much not like what we expect from the Spurs.
Uh-huh.
Right? Like, this is some like next level strange, like, who's Kawhi listening to? Okay. Who are the Spurs trying to talk to? Like, are they trying to talk to Kawhi? Are they trying to talk to his people? It's just, it's wild.
Yeah. Well, I also think they deserve it.
Yes.
Because the Spurs have had zero drama for 20 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, have they had any personnel drama? LaMarcus was a little bit of drama.
There was some drama with LaMarcus. I mean, there was drama with Tim Duncan in his free agency year.
And that's, was there?
There is. There was. He was real close to going to Orlando.
Okay.
Like, that was, you know, Tim Duncan drama is the least amount of drama.
Yeah.
It's seventh heaven level drama.
I mean, if you're speaking as a Lakers fan, the amount of drama that we've had to deal with along these lines over the years.
Oh, man. I mean, because we had Kobe Drama King.
Shaq.
You know, Shaq, another Drama King. You know, the Lakers are, you know, I mean, from ownership on down,
Bynum,
it's a Odom. Drama. It's a drama team.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Spurs.
We had Kobe, like, being interviewed by fans next to a car, being like, trade Bynum.
Ship his ass out of here.
Yeah.
Ship his ass out of here. Which, you know, hurt me to my soul as the world's number one Andrew Bynum fan.
Oh, Lord.
did you know how many Andrew Bynum jerseys I own?
How many?
I own 4 Andrew Bynum jerseys.
Oh, my God.
That's right. 1 Lakers and 3 Philadelphia 76ers Bynum jerseys.
You know what? I like what Bynum did for us. I love the fact that he clocked J.J. Barea.
I love the fact that he's good at bowling.
Is he better than Chris Paul?
He is absolutely not better than Chris Paul. I will. Chris Paul is a good bowler.
Okay, so Golden State, they're fine.
They're fine.
I will say, last time I talked about, they're not completely back. I think that first half, I wonder if, as the games go on, until it gets really serious, their time when they kick in and get serious about a game will get further and further back. So, like, game 3 against the Spurs, it won't be till the fourth quarter. And then game 4 is, like, the last 3 minutes of the game.
And then it's just overtime, and they're like, well, okay, all right, maybe we'll turn it up.
And the way the Spurs can pick up a game is that they'll just, like, overestimate their ability to come back from, like, 12 points with 6 minutes left or whatever.
Yeah.
And the shots just won't fall.
Yeah.
So I could definitely see Spurs taking one, but they're not going to. Warriors, by playing LaMarcus, probably going to get a good preview of playing against another big man, because they're probably facing New Orleans next.
This year was the first year that New Orleans played them close and won a couple of games in the regular season against them.
So, I mean, I love Anthony Davis. They're rolling. I didn't watch the game last night. Did you catch that one?
I watched some of it, and I watched the highlights. Mostly very impressed by Jrue Holiday.
Yeah, that's what the other thing on our first podcast, I was like, you know, Lonzo's defensive numbers are better than Jrue Holiday's. And then, like, he like destroyed them at the end of the last game.
Yeah.
He, like, got that CJ McCollum, and then he, like, hammered the layup against a guy, whoever that kid is, I'd never heard of. The like Collington or whatever is.
Pat Connaughton.
Yeah.
Yeah, from Notre Dame.
Of course. His name is Connaughton.
Connaughton.
And he went to Notre Dame.
Yes, yeah.
Great.
Could there be another stereotype added in there? I don't know. Probably. Yeah. Jrue has been absolutely shutting down Damian Lillard in this
series. Which is crazy.
In a way that, like, you don't see many people shut down Dame, because Dame's got range and he can shoot it from anywhere. So you got to guard him everywhere, mm-hmm. and he has been guarded everywhere. Drew has been killing it.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Not great for the Blazers.
No.
Again, not a lot of sympathy for the Blazers in my heart.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Rose Garden is a very inhospitable place to
the
all
Moda
things
Center,
LA.
Casey.
I'm going to call it the Rose Garden forever. It's never going to be the Moda Center, ever.
I don't love the Blazers. The only thing I love about them, I did love the Drexler, Terry Porter years.
That was back when I was
rooting against the Bulls. Yeah. I was basically root for every team that they were up against.
Yes, yeah.
Which, by the way, I just want to say, I don't, like, I feel like if all the current pundits were back in the Chicago Bulls day, they'd be like, well, forget it. The Bulls are just going to win. Because the Bulls were more dominant than the Warriors. I know that statistically they aren't, but, like, there was, I mean, we convinced ourselves that those finals were close, but, like, there was a sense of inevitability about Jordan at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And no one, and basketball was so popular, like, everyone loved it. So, anyway, I can't remember. The Blazers, like, one of my most hated NBA pundits and the beginner of most of this modern bullshit is Henry Abbott.
Oh,
of True Hoop.
Oh, wow.
And Blazers fan.
Okay.
So yes, I always in the back of my mind just think, like, oh, if the Blazers are losing, then somewhere out there Henry Abbott is being sad.
That is an aggressive thing, because, like, that guy, I mean, you know, this is probably one of the reasons you have so many issues with the current blogosphere. That guy started so much of it.
He started, I would say all of it, because he definitely started the, I'm just a regular guy with a blog.
Okay.
I'm going to use, this is the modern NBA writer. I'm at home. I start a blog by myself. I find stats that attack Kobe's career.
Okay. All right. Okay. Yeah. All right. We're back in it now.
It's the
we're playing Kobe Shield. Yeah.
I'm just saying that this is the model that, so now it's not people attacking Kobe. Now it's people, you know, I don't know. So I just remember him at one point saying at the end of a game, he would prefer to have Kevin Martin over Kobe.
Well, I mean, you know, Kevin Martin's got that release point way above his head.
That Lonzo,
you know,
release point.
You
exactly.
can't block that. It's an awkward left-handed, it's crazy.
Well, that points to the fact that, you know, the fact that I enjoy the Blazers losing because of that is that I enjoy a lot of NBA Schadenfreude, mm-hmm. which yes. is I like to go into the game threads of the losing team and read their comments.
Oh, you are a haterade drinker.
This is after the game.
Yes.
I never troll them, like, and I don't post at all.
Yeah,
I
just read. You read, and it's fun to watch people be so mad and so upset.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you could do this for any team. Any team is going to get in there and just have fans that are so sad and so upset.
Yeah.
And it's so fun to watch them. You know, just I agree with you. The Schadenfreude is fantastic.
I also think it's funny because I think most fans, I think a lot of them just get angry at the wrong things. So this is what I get angry at in games. I get angry if the offense doesn't take good shots. Okay. I don't care if they go in or not. I just, like, if you pass up a good shot, I get mad at you. If you can tell sometimes when a player, and Kobe would do this too, where they've decided, like, this is my moment. Like, I'm going to play from ego, and I'm going to shoot this no matter what.
Okay, so you're not a hot hand guy. You're not gonna enjoy somebody coming down. And
I don't
the hot
believe
hand.
In the hot hand.
Okay, all right. Thank you, Henry Abbott.
However, you know that there's, like, there's been revisionist math on the hot hand.
I know that. You know, we're still researching some hot hand stuff. A lot of hot hand stuff is, like, you know, you talk about it. And you talk about somebody like Kobe who takes a ton of shots,
yeah.
And how the hot hand affects, you know, his decision making.
Right, right. If he goes and hunts more shots,
yeah,
because he thinks he's hot, and then there he gets worse and worse shots.
We always used to say, my buddy and I, who would watch Lakers games, that it was really good when Kobe missed his first couple of shots,
uh-huh.
because then
he'd be more selective.
He'd be more selective. He'd pass more. He'd really get the entire team involved. When he made his first three shots, we were like, "This is a Lakers loss," because Kobe's going to shoot us into oblivion.
So just to sum up what the hot hand is, if you haven't heard of it, hot hand is basically the idea that, like, if you make a shot, you're more likely to make the next one. And it's actually been the subject of, like, a lot of, like, math research.
Yep.
One of the main studies was by this guy named Tversky, which was they examined free throws in, I think, collegiate ball. But basically, okay, it was like, if we examine free throws, if the hot hand exists, then when you make a free throw, you should be more likely to make the next one. And basically, they pulled all the math out, and they were like, it actually turns out that it's not. It's about the same.
Yeah.
So, and then in the last 3 years, there has been a mostly math, pure math-based revision of those studies that are like, no, actually, the way you're pulling out these results is the methodology is flawed, and there actually is a hot hand, and it's about, I guess, like 15% or something like that. And every time I've tried to read the revision of, like, why their usage of the data is wrong, I don't understand it. And it doesn't really make sense to me.
Okay.
I sort of take the word of mathematicians who are like, you're using this data in a skewed way.
Yeah.
But when I read their rationale of, like, why, I don't understand it. And I'm pretty decent at math,
yeah,
but, like, it's a concept that, like, I don't, it doesn't make sense to me.
I'll have to read that. You got to send that to me because I love statistical studies.
Yeah. So, I mean, basically the idea is that it's something about, like, you're only pulling results where there's a hit, and something about, like, pulling only those things from the pool skews it somehow.
Okay.
I don't get it. But in general, do I believe that? I don't really believe in the hot hand.
But I don't care what you believe. I care, how does it make you feel? How does it make you feel when somebody comes down the court in a hot hand and just pulls, right? Takes a bad shot
so
to make their hot hand happen.
Like, even Kevin Durant, I thought, took a couple bad shots in that game.
And they went in.
Yeah, but in the first half.
Oh, in the first half they didn't. In the second half, yeah, they did. I texted you. I was like, Kevin Durant, fuck. And you were like, wait, what happened?
Yeah, yeah. Did he get injured? So, Casey, I actually went away from the game for about 5 minutes, because this is the other thing. I like to have a little buffer build up so I can skip free throws and commercials and stuff. And so Casey texted Kevin Durant, fuck, !! And I thought that Kevin Durant had gotten injured. I thought it was going to go back and it was going to be him on the ground, like holding his knee or something. And I think I went back and, like, Kevin Looney was on the ground.
Yeah.
Because of something. And I was like, oh, no.
It was just that he made two just completely just pull 'em 3-pointers in a row, and it was like he blew my mind because, you know, they needed that momentum to really put the Spurs away. And
let's talk 2 3-point plays in a row.
Okay,
Bogdan Bogdanovic.
Ooh. okay, sorry.
Did you see the
was
wait,
it
not?
Because Bogdan is the Kings one.
Oh, no. What's his first name?
Bojan.
Bojan.
Yeah. Don't worry.
Bougie Bogdanovic.
Yes.
On the Pacers.
Oh, my God.
Did you watch that game?
No, I didn't watch that game.
It's funny because near the end of the game, they were like, he hasn't shot well, but there's a point in the first half or so where he made 3-point layups in a row. That was, like, incredible. Anyway, love the Pacers.
They
love everything about them.
All the highlights. All the highlights of that game were ridiculous. They stomped. They stomped on Cleveland, and Cleveland looked like they got a great game from LeBron and a great game from J.R. Smith. And you lose that game, and you're like, "Oh, what happened?"
They got a good stat game from LeBron.
Okay.
They got an okay game from him.
Okay.
But he's a little, like, sleepy.
Okay.
And nothing from anybody else. But that's not the story of the game. The story of the game is Victor Oladipo.
Yeah. Just, like, coming through with the revenge on Dan Gilbert that we didn't know about game.
Yeah. I will. So there's a move that Victor Oladipo does that I haven't seen anybody else do.
Okay.
Which is literally when he crosses half court and you're at the 3-point line, you're just under the 3-point line waiting to guard him.
Yeah.
He runs full steam at you.
Yeah.
And just pulls up at the 3-point line and shoots it.
Because you're on your heels.
You're on your heels because he's going to go around you. I haven't seen anybody else do this. He did it, like, multiple times. It's such a great move. Like, and then a couple times he ran at you, didn't shoot the jumper, and then went around. Like,
it feels to me like a Westbrook thing, right?
It does feel like, actually, Westbrook. It does seem like
it feels like a Westbrook thing where Westbrook will run at you full speed because that's what he knows how to do,
yeah,
and knows how to do it well, of course. And then he makes that decision when you're on your back heel.
It's a little more in control than Westbrook.
Yeah, yeah.
One thing I really liked about Oladipo's game that I saw was his balance is really good. His just control when he just feels very in control the whole game.
Yeah.
And which is, you know, he's young and energetic and fast, but he doesn't feel like he's, like, reckless. And there's one time he did that. There's one, I forget if it was a three-pointer or something. He made a really good play. You know, they always cut to you for the reaction. And he just nodded. He's just like, yep, I'll be able to get that shot the whole series.
He's not intimidated. He's not intimidated, and that's great. He's the runaway winner for most improved player.
Yeah, and he's also...
He's got that swagger, and it's very, very fun to watch.
Yeah. And they got great contributions from the whole team. I'm just they're a fun team to watch.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't care about Cleveland. I mean, there's no way Cleveland's going to go far anyway, honestly, cuz their defense is horrible.
I mean, on this podcast, I predicted 5 games for Cleveland.
Yeah.
And I don't know, with the way they played in game 1, I really want to see how they respond in game 2.
I think they could still actually win the series.
Me too.
But there's no way they're going to win this championship. There's no way in hell. No.
I mean, you know, you've got any team that comes out of the West is going to be favored hugely against the Cleveland team. And I don't think that I trust Cleveland to get past Toronto. I mean, I called it last time on the cast. Toronto is my pick for
East.
For the East,
yeah,
and that I want them to win the whole thing,
yeah.
And so I don't know. I don't see them. Being I just able don't to get think that
Cleveland. I feel like they don't know how to play team defense. so LeBron can play great. You know, they can put LeBron on Oladipo if they want.
Yeah.
But I don't think he's going to want to do that.
But then who's guarding Bogdanovich? Yeah. You know, that's what you know. Three-point layups, you know, it's crazy out here. He's out here spinning, wheeling, and dealing.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't have LeBron stopping him, exactly. What's going on?
Bogdanovich is the 1A of every NBA team. No, but, like, I don't think – I think if LeBron – if they put LeBron on Depot for the whole game, LeBron's not getting his triple-double. So
that's a lot of work.
Yeah. The Cavaliers team is just not built for – defense. Jeff Green, horrible. I believe he was like 0 of 7.
Do you remember the Browingtons?
No, what's that?
Okay, so in OKC, when it was Westbrook, Durant, Harden, Jeff Green,
you know,
the big four,
uh-huh.
they had this like fake boy band that they put together called the Browingtons.
Oh my god.
And it's so funny that, you know, the Browingtons have separated and are all on different teams now.
Uh-huh.
You know, those big four, and you know, every team, they're the star of the team. You know, you got Durant in Golden State,
yep.
Oklahoma City still got Westbrook, Harden's in Houston, and the star of Cleveland, Jeff Green.
Jeff Green played more than 30 minutes and made 0 shots.
Oh, man, I feel bad because I want Jeff Green to play well. Like I don't dislike the guy. I've never seen him play in a way where it's like that guy can continue to do that.
He has his moments. He had some good defensive plays in that first game, but he makes these
decisions. He's just like, oh.
Well, actually, when it comes down to it, I was thinking like, you know, so many players in the league are physically gifted.
Yeah.
That really the mental approach does become the separation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what it appears like to me, because I feel like there are certain players, you know, they're just going to make a boneheaded play at some point.
Yeah.
I mean, you like JaVale McGee, it's like just occasionally just makes a dumb play and you're like, cool. And then he also like that one alley-oop where Iguodala bounced it off the ground and he grabbed it on his way up and then dunked it. I was like, there's no one else that can do that.
I mean, yeah. Yes. And, you know, I'm a JaVale McGee apologist, and I have been for many, many years, like Segway and all. I've got a JaVale McGee Wizards jersey. That's how much.
How many jerseys do you have?
I think I've got about 20.
Okay.
I've got a lot of jerseys. That's my thing. I've got my great jersey white whale is the entire first year in Brooklyn Nets team.
How many of those do you have?
I have 2. I've got Joe Johnson and I've got Darren Williams.
And who are you missing?
I'm missing Brooke Lopez.
Uh-huh.
I'm missing Kevin Garnett. I'm missing Paul Pierce.
And now do you mean you need jerseys from that specific year?
From that specific year.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So my goal would be to get the away swingman, the black ones, because I like the way that those uh-huh. black Brooklyn jerseys
so
look.
So you have 20, and so a full like 20% of your jerseys are Andrew Bynum.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So speaking of Toronto.
Yeah.
They seem like they're in good shape.
They have been dressing down the Wizards because the Wizards have not been getting much from their team, right? Mm-hmm. Like that first game, it was close, but it didn't feel that close. The second game was a blowout, and it didn't even feel as close as the score indicated. It just feels like Toronto is going to run away. Yeah.
Another game I didn't see, I was like, what's the score? And it was like 78 to something. And it was like 11 minutes left in the third quarter.
Yeah.
And they already had like 70, 80 points.
Toronto has just been, I mean, it's so fun to watch DeMar DeRozan, because here's the thing. You talk about teams and players need playoff experience to do well in the playoffs. This Toronto Raptors team is extremely experienced.
Yeah.
Right. They're experienced with performing poorly. They've performed well. You know, they've done it all. And to see DeMar DeRozan this year take his game to that level, and especially, you know, in game two, he killed it. He killed it. He was so good.
Well, maybe he watched Kobe's detail.
Yeah. Yeah. And he realized he had to be a threat as soon as he gets that ball.
There are a lot of good, it's funny. There was I just want to say there's things in that episode where the play will start. And like Valanciunas will sort of set a screen, and immediately Kobe will stop and be like, no, that's not going to do. I need to go to, and it, what's great is he speaks as if he's DeMar DeRozan.
Yeah.
So he's like, and it's him running the film. You can tell, like, it goes back and forth. It's clearly him like running it. So he'll be like, I got to go to Valanciunas at practice and tell him, like, you got to hit this guy on the screen. Like, it's like a lot of the plays stop 2 seconds in and he's like, this screen isn't good enough. Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And I actually should watch game two just to see if like he applied, because he takes specific plays that they did and he's like, I think maybe the next game we might try running this off of this instead. Like, if they're going to give us this, then we're going to try this. Like, mm-hmm. It's very fascinating.
Nice.
But anyway, Toronto, he's looking great.
Yeah.
What's your take on Wall and Beal?
I mean, I think Wall and Beal have not played well so far. in the playoffs. And I think that is a bummer, because I think that they're both good players and I want them to do well.
Well, they've got playoff experience too.
They do. They do. Beal had a real rough game in game two. And, you know, and that'll happen. When you're a shooter, you'll have rough games. You know, it's not going to be every time you're going to be able to
shoot. Yeah, like Clay will have a stinker at some point.
I mean, Steph has stinkers. Durant has stinkers. I mean, you know, anybody who makes their living shooting the basketball is going to have a stinker. People like Kyle Lowry, right? That's the guy who, when he has a stinker, he does other stuff. He gets 15 rebounds. He passes the ball a ton. He plays lockdown defense. With Bradley Beal, you know, his big thing is like making those shots, and you know, getting to the basket is something that he's kind of added to his game a little, but he just wasn't able to make it happen last game.
I haven't watched a ton of Wizards this year. I feel like their offense doesn't have a great team flow to it.
Oh, you mean because it's got Scott Brooks at the helm? So Scotty Brooks offense.
And John Wall at the helm.
I think that John Wall could do it. I don't think that Scott Brooks is going to put them in a position.
I believe that John Wall could do it too. Like if Bradley Stevens was his coach, I think he could. Or, you know, even not if Budenholzer or anybody, any middling offensive coach.
Yeah.
But I also think John Wall won't naturally do it.
Okay.
So like if you put Steve Nash on a Scott Brooks team, he's still going to try to find a flow.
Yeah.
Like just as his sort of like player philosophy.
Yeah.
You just hate Scott Brooks.
I mean, yes, I do. I'm not a Scott Brooks fan. I'll put that down. I'm not a Scott Brooks fan, but
I didn't like Scott Brooks as a player.
Oh.
I mean, I just don't. I put him in the Scott Brooks. I put in the like Danny Ainge, Jerry Seasting, like white guy punks who basically get in fights with people.
Okay.
I actually don't remember if Scott Brooks got in a fight.
I don't think he did, but you know,
the other night I watched Danny Ainge NBA fights.
I mean,
it's actually really fun.
Danny Ainge has been a punk for forever. Yeah. And that, like, that made him as a player, because like he could play, but he was mostly just like there to punk people.
He's the you know, the modern day one I would say is TJ McConnell. Your JJ Barrez. Calderon is not really like that.
No, Calderon's a sweetheart.
I'm trying to think of other like guys who just like provoke hostility.
Lance Stevenson.
Oh, Lance Stevenson.
Lance Stevenson is,
yeah,
is
I
that
love
guy.
Him, though.
I do. I also love Lance Stevenson. I love a lot of these guys.
Born ready.
God, I mean, just if there is a guy who who would be great to talk hilarious basketball with, it's Lance Stevenson.
Yeah.
I mean, that guy, he hits his head into the stanchion after layups.
That play was incredible.
It was incredible. It was an incredible play. And then also, he just goes and does the funniest thing. It's like, yeah, and he needs to pump himself up to play with that kind of energy, and I love that.
Yeah, I think that he's great. By the way, that was a play where LeBron didn't get back on defense. Oh, yeah. But it's playoff LeBron. He's going to raise his defense level. He stayed at the other end of the court and complained about a call.
Yeah.
And then Lance Stevenson just went down the middle of the court and just dunked it.
Oh, my God. Can we talk about a complainer of the highest order?
Sure.
Dario Saric.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
I watched that guy complain after every play. It wasn't like, oh, he'd complain when he was – when other people got fouled, that guy was complaining.
Yeah.
It was very funny. It was – in such a way that it felt like it stopped them from playing good defense a lot.
I think we're only a year or two away from the Sixers being a hated team.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because I'm almost there. Because to be honest, I don't love Embiid. I don't love his – because this is what I don't love. I was just thinking about last night. He's massively egotistical in a super charming way.
Okay.
But the idea that he's always got to chime in, he's always got to like tweet something, is super entertaining if you are a fan of his. But when they get to the point when they win consistently and he continues to troll people, like if they win a championship and he trolls or whatever, they're going to be like the Yankees and Cowboys of, especially because of the way they got there.
Okay. Here's where I'm seeing that. Who does he troll?
Other players.
He trolls other players.
Yeah.
All right. He doesn't troll other fans. He trolls people who he like. It feels like he trolls people that he's friendly with. Right.
Westbrook.
I mean, okay, that's not trolling. That's a true. You're right. But like all the stuff that he does on Instagram, like where he leaves comments, he's like, it seems like those are people that he's like friends with, right? It doesn't seem to me like he does it in a way that like actually really annoys people, except for Westbrook and Whiteside. Westbrook and Whiteside, those are two dudes that do not like Embiid, and they'll not be quiet about it, and they will stare at him. But everybody else, it seems like they're in on it. When people are not in on it, you're right. When the other players aren't in on it, I'm sure that will get around, and people will be like, okay, this is serious. We got to like represent
our
team.
Well, I just think that like it's harmless fun when they're a lottery team coming up. And then when they're a threat, I'm just saying naturally people are going to be like, yeah, I want him to lose now.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see that. I think
like there will be a bit of,
I think it'll take a little longer than that. And you know, until then it's going to be great. Until they win, it'll be great. When they win, I can see the tide turning. Because, I mean, the tide turned against the Warriors. People loved watching the Warriors, and now people are very upset that they have the best players and they win in a way that is not
fun. Well, that's what
fun.
I mean. Like, so if you look at the Warriors and like, oh, they have the best players. Well, they drafted some, they signed some, and all that. When Philadelphia starts to win, it's going to be like, how did they get their best players? Oh, they like tanked for like 25 years,
and they signed their best players from the scrap heap, you know, Marco Bellinelli,
exactly, and TJ McConnell, or they did draft him,
or sign Ilyasova,
yeah,
you know, the king.
I feel like with, like, for example, if they lose to the Heat because MB doesn't play,
yeah,
I will find a little bit of enjoyment in that.
Oh, yeah.
Because of Whiteside being like, earlier in the season, being like, maybe stay on the court if you want to like talk as much shit as you do.
Which is an amazing, amazing response. That's, I mean, that's a fantastic, because what can Embiid do other than be on the court to play more basketball, which is exactly what we want from him.
Well, and also there is a thing of like, Embiid's got amazing stats. Yeah. Like
defensive stats too.
It's but nuts. Also, what do we think any of the like players on the All NBA team, what do we think any of their stats would be if they never played back to backs the whole season?
Yeah.
Like they'd all be bumped up a little bit.
Yeah, yes. I agree. And he started to play them around the middle of the season and then he got hurt again and you know, that last one, oh man, what a freak injury. Yeah. Just a real bummer.
So
can we talk Heat? Just real quick.
Yeah.
What a ridiculous game from Dwayne Wade.
Yeah.
Right? Dwayne Wade was great. Dragic had a good game.
Yeah.
You know, he came back and he did
I also watched some Dragic fights the other night.
Yes, Dragic gets in some fights. I miss the Dragic Sasha Vujicic fights because they got some real Slovenian bad blood there. That's like they're mad at each other. I want to know what that's about. I want to know like what happens in an Eastern European
open a history book, Casey.
No, I don't know. No, I mean they're on the same national team. They hate each other from like being growing up.
I wonder if Sasha knows Doncic.
Oh,
because
man.
They're
that. So
that's the same
Doncic
team,
is
isn't?
No.
Oh no. He's Dragic is on the same EuroLeague team.
Yes, as the same Doncic. EuroLeague team. Yes. But not because Doncic is. Is he Croatian?
I don't know.
I can't remember. Serbian.
All these white people seem the same to me. Who do you believe in? Heat or Sixers?
I still believe in the Sixers because I don't think that the Heat will be able to do that consistently.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that
I think the Heat are better coached. I think Spoelstra's better than
Spoelstra's
Brett
a great
Brown.
Coach. I think Brett Brown is a good coach. I don't know. I mean, this is his first year, like taking them in a way where they're actually good.
Yeah.
Instead of just like trying to build everything.
I have a bias against the way he talks. Just like, I mean, the guys, you know, Embiid wants to play. You know, we're all on the same team, and you like that kind of. It's just my bias against that kind of.
That's very fair. Do you have a bias against his ping pong photo?
I haven't seen the ping pong
photo. Oh, my God. The Brett Brown ping pong photo. Okay, I'm pulling my phone out. I'm showing you. This photo is the best photo of anyone who's ever been an NBA coach. And I can say that completely and truly. And this is knowing that Pat Riley has taken some amazing photos.
While you're looking that up, quickly, Celtics, Bucks, I don't really care. I'm just
what did I say about the Bucks other than that Giannis is great and almost everybody else is trash?
Yeah.
And that as a team, they don't work very well. Middleton has been playing great too. Giannis and Middleton have been playing great. But Eric Bledsoe has shit the bed in a way that is like very, very funny. All right.
I have seen this photo.
Yeah.
Yes. I want to see him play Daryl Morey.
Yes. Yeah. That's a trust the process championship right there.
I've played a fair amount of ping pong, and Daryl Morey has a real game.
He's got game?
Yeah, he legit does. Because I think I know his – I looked up at one point his USATT rating, and he's decent.
Nice.
Judah Friedlander, also a good ping pong player.
Oh.
So I just don't care about Bucks Celtics because in both cases, like I don't whoever wins, I'm just you're gonna lose at some point. Like neither of them is a serious contender. So.
I don't think that they're. I mean I think you're right. And I don't know. I could see either of them beating whoever comes out of Sixers and Heat. I don't think it's probable. I just
that half of the bracket is just like whatever.
Yeah.
I can't see either of them beating Philly if Philly is rolling and they have Embiid.
Yeah, but who knows if that's going
to
be happening.
Well, what I mean is if Philly gets to the next round, on some level they'll be rolling.
Okay.
Heat is a team that's harder to read. Like, I don't quite know what the Heat's character is. So it's really hard to predict. But I just feel like with Boston, it's like sort of their JV team in a way. So, and I don't think that they're, I think they'll go as far as they can, but like in a way, it's just like, you know, we're just chalking up experience for these guys for next year.
But their JV team is still so good, in a way that is unfair. And you know, it's Brett Stevens, right?
His player development.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah. I think they're going to end up being Spurs East, like historically, them and the Blazers.
Spurs East has been a thing, and I think it's a testament to the Spurs,
like a thing people say.
Oh my god!
Yeah, yeah.
Like the Hawks were going to be Spurs East because of Budenholzer.
Right.
Toronto was Spurs East because
of Masai or something.
Yeah, of Masai because of their ridiculous depth because of the way that they tried to be defense first.
Well, so the way I mean Spurs East for Brad Stevens is. Like excellent coach who gets more out of his players than other coaches would.
Okay.
And installs like a team philosophy.
And you, and you just plug in whatever guys, and then you also get those good people who last for a long time.
And stronger in the regular season than in the playoffs.
Ah. Okay.
So, I mean, only a Lakers fan could say that about the Spurs.
I mean, you know, anytime that the Spurs, they win every other year for, you know, 10 years basically.
But for a long time, they had a habit of like peaking in the regular season, and kind of being like not that much to worry about in the playoffs.
Yeah.
What series are we missing?
I think the only one that we are
so we think
missing
Cleveland...
is Houston because they've only played one game.
Yeah,
the Houston and that game was a lot closer than people
I think
thought
that
it was
that might be as close as they get though.
You know, when you get that close, you got to make that happen.
I mean, and maybe Chris Paul will throw up another stinker like he does consistently in the playoffs in his career.
It was so funny how that ball at the end of the game just got thrown away. It was like, oh well, we're giving them a chance to tie because
Chris Paul doing Chris Paul things, playoff Chris Paul.
All right, here we go.
I mean, there's going to be a nice at the end of his career. There's going to be a nice supercut of his playoff mistakes.
Yeah.
That I will enjoy making and posting. Somebody on Reddit was like, you know, what evidence do you have of Chris Paul choking in the playoffs? And he wrote like, you know, show me one example, I'll wait. And then I was like, well, here's like six examples, or here's like five series that he should have won, or games that he threw away or whatever.
Yeah.
And it was just like, there is evidence for it. Of course, Harden had a great game, but that was, much closer than we thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
Even with a bad game from Towns.
Yeah.
Or what do you call it? Like passive game from Towns.
Yes. Yeah. Passive game from Towns. Oh, just not that good game from Butler.
Yeah. Surprising. As opposed to, another series we're not talking about, playoff Paul George.
PG. And that to me is, I was all in on Utah, and with Donovan Mitchell hobbled, I got to go the other way.
Yeah.
I mean, that to me, watching Paul George make all those threes, I'm like, just please lose this series. Please come to LA. Come
this is why that Rockets half of the bracket is insane. That's like the pull of death for them, which is if Thunder like rounds into playoff shape, if they can get a little bit from Melo, Paul George plays at this level, and they have to face that in round two, as opposed to Golden State either facing New Orleans, who I think they'll probably have a pretty easy time. You know, I think Davis will have like 40 point games or something, but they won't really be troubled by them, or that Pelicans Blazers goes like 6 or 7. And then they play the Blazers or whatever. Like, their half of the bracket is way easier.
Yeah.
Houston's tonight, right?
Yep.
Houston's tonight. And Cleveland is tonight.
Cleveland.
That's the game I'm most excited about.
Yeah.
Because, like, last night, I was like, man, if the Trailblazers lose this game and they're down 2-0, that, like, is so rough. And I feel the same way about Cleveland. Like, I would assume they're going to win tonight's game. Because if they don't, that's going to be a hole I don't think LeBron's ever been in.
Yeah, and people are going to freak out.
And they should.
I mean, this is a hole that LeBron, you know, hasn't been in for, what, 12 years was the stat that he hadn't lost a first round game one in a very, very, very long time.
Yeah, and has he ever been down 0-2 losing the first home games? I bet he hasn't.
I don't think so.
I will predict right now.
Yes.
I think so. My easy prediction is LeBron's going to stay in the Eastern Conference.
Really?
Yeah. No question.
Okay.
I would bet any number of dollars on that.
Because I'm going to bet any number of dollars that he's leaving. Right. He's not staying in Cleveland.
Yeah. So I'm sure he's staying in the Eastern Conference because it's an easy ride to the finals. Here's my capsule thing about LeBron and all his finals trips, because people are always like, you know, he's been to the finals so many times in a row.
Yeah.
So either you have to count that, you either have to count his finals record, which is what, 2 and 3 and whatever.
Yeah, it's 3 and 6.
Okay. You either have to count that against him, or you can't count the number of finals he's made in a row. Because basically what that means is that he has gotten through a conference to the finals over and over, and sometimes with a team that shouldn't have been in the final, or like that isn't competitive in the finals because it wouldn't have made it out of the Western Conference. Those two things go hand in hand. Because if he'd been in the West, like for example, Jordan, the 2 years or the year that the Magic beat them, and the Jordan didn't get in the finals.
Yeah.
So because of that, he has one less finals appearance on his record, but he also wouldn't have won against the Rockets that year.
Yeah.
So he'd be 1-6 or something like that.
Yeah.
So the fact that I think he enjoys the fact that like it doesn't take much to get out of the Eastern Conference, and so that's why I think he's going to stay there. It, no matter how good his team is, if he goes to the West, there's a good chance he doesn't get into the finals.
Yeah. I mean, because there's so many teams in the West that don't get out every year.
Yeah. I was actually thinking, what if he just went back to Miami? He's got bad blood with. Or not bad. He's got an estranged relationship with Riley. But yeah. Riley just came out. I almost think that was a little bit strategic on Riley's part.
To
just sort of start the discussion again and be like, you know what? I think it made sense for him to go home and win that championship. LeBron's wife probably wants
Savannah.
Wants to go to Miami. I don't even know. Did they move out of Miami at all?
Yeah, like, yeah. They're out of Miami. Okay. They bought houses in L.A.
They definitely didn't want to move out of Miami. If that barbershop episode is to believe. The counter to that is there's not a lot of great landing places in the East for him. I think if he went to Philly, he'd get some Durant fallout for being like, you're joining a stacked team.
I mean, but he's already done that.
Yeah.
Like, he's already weathered that storm.
Well, that's why I understand why Durant gets so much of it.
He's got decision experience, okay? Yeah. He's got experience making the decision.
Well, he doesn't think he's ever been on a super team.
Where did you watch The Decision?
I don't remember.
I watched it at TGI Fridays in La Jolla, California. I walked from the apartment. I was house sitting, and I sat at the bar by myself, and I ordered myself a large Bud Light. And I watched LeBron talk to Jim Gray, who I hate Jim Gray. I watched LeBron talk to Jim Gray for an hour, and I sat at a TGI Fridays, and I was enthralled. I loved watching it.
So do you want another decision?
Oh, I mean,
there won't be one.
There is not going to be one. Like he's stated that he thinks it was a bad move.
Yeah.
I would love another decision. Decision round two would make me the happiest person in the entire world.
I thought it was stupid. But I appreciated it because there is an element where LeBron's egomania doesn't realize how tone deaf he is sometimes.
Yeah.
And the fact that he didn't think to himself, maybe the decision wasn't a good idea.
For the kids, man. It was for the kids.
Even last year in the finals when he was like, well, I'm doing well. I got a triple double. I love that kind of tone deafness from him where he's just like, oh, you don't realize that was a dickish thing to say when your team is losing and you're just like, I got mine. Like, I mean, I think that is something that's special about him is that in the end, it's him over everything else.
Yeah.
We touched all the Western Conference.
Yeah.
So we're excited about today's games.
Yeah.
I think we're going to maybe have to do this twice a week until the playoffs are over.
Sounds good to me.
Any last thoughts?
Thanks for listening.
Yeah, wait, what are the games tonight? Let's make predictions for today's game.
All right,
I think Cleveland's going to win their game.
Yeah, I think Cleveland wins. I think Oklahoma City wins. And I think Houston wins.
Wait, is the Houston will definitely win. I think Houston will win a blowout game tonight. Oklahoma City, that in Utah?
No, it's in Oklahoma City.
Oh, they've got home court. And Donovan Mitchell is...
He's questionable.
I think, yeah, I think Thunder will win that game.
Yeah.
They're in trouble then if they don't have him.
Yes. Yeah.
All right, guys, go watch your games, and we'll see you next time.
Sounds great.